They climbed from the ravine and picked up the trail again in the permafrost. Although the countryside was open, and they could see for miles, there was no sign of life except for a few wheeling seabirds. The trail led to a shallow valley that brought them to the cave entrance.
"Someone has been doing some mining," Zavala said.
"Nice call, Sherlock." Austin picked up a jackhammer attached to a portable compressor that had been lying on the ground near the entrance. Zavala's sharp eyes examined the charred rubble around the hole.
"Okay, Watson, someone did a little blasting here, too."
Austin said,
"We've only been here less than an hour, and I'm already starting to dislike Ivory Island."
"I've been in livelier places," Zavala said.
"Are we going in?"
Austin crawled into the hole and came out a minute later, shaking his head.
"Suicide. We don't know how far it goes. We don't even have a flashlight."
They made their way back to where they had left the paraglider, called the icebreaker, and asked Ivanov to send in a party to collect the dead and to bring in some electric torches. Ivanov agreed to send crewmen in right away, and at Austin's suggestion, he said they would be armed. Knowing the captain's interest, Austin said that he was hopeful that Carla was still alive. The captain said that Maria Arbatov had been treated and was doing well. They wished each other good luck and clicked off. He and Zavala strapped themselves into the paraglider seat, found a low hill where the wind was in the right direction, and launched themselves into the air with all the grace of a drunken goonie bird. The paraglider gained altitude and wheeled high over the island. Austin had thoroughly examined the charts, but still he was surprised at the size of the island. There was a lot of territory to cover with an aircraft that moved with a cruising speed of 26 miles per hour. Austin was about to head back to the beach to rendezvous with the boat party when Zavala shouted in his ear. He was pointing toward the old volcano. Austin followed the pointing finger and saw a well-defined track leading up the side of the volcano. They flew toward the volcano and saw that the trail was not a natural feature, but rather a series of switchbacks cut into the side of the mountain. Austin suspected that man had a hand in the track's creation.
"Looks like a road," Austin said.
"That's what I thought. Want to take a look?"
The question was unnecessary. Austin had already brought the paraglider around, and they were soaring toward the lip of the caldera. The subterranean city was laid out in a grid pattern under the domed roof of an enormous cavern. The ancient metropolis was cut off from the sun and should have been in complete darkness, but it shimmered in a silvery green light that emanated from every surface of the city and streets. Schroeder thought he had seen everything there was to be seen, but the luminescence bathing the scene left him spellbound.
"What makes everything glow so brightly?" he asked, as he limped along a street with Carla at his side.
"I've been wondering the same thing," Carla said. "I studied light-emitting minerals as part of a geology course. As I recall, some minerals glow under the influence of ultraviolet rays. Other types emit light from radiation or chemical change. But if we're right, and this is an old volcano, maybe there's a thermoluminescent effect caused by heat."
After leaving the mural tunnel that led to the city, they had walked under a huge corbel arch down a broad ramp to an open square with a step pyramid about 25 feet high at its center. The processional motif, including the domesticated woolly mammoths, was continued on the exterior levels of the pyramid, although the colors were less bright than in the access tunnel. Carla surmised that it was a temple or platform for priests or speakers to address people gathered in the plaza. A paved boulevard about 50 feet wide led into the heart of the city. They had strolled along the thoroughfare like a couple of tourists, bedazzled by the bright lights of Broadway. The buildings were much smaller than Manhattan skyscrapers, three stories at the most, yet they were architectural wonders considering their probable age.
"Who do you think built this wonderful city?" Schroeder asked.
"Ancient Siberians. The pictures show them as Caucasian, but I detect a hint of the Asian in their facial features. This island was once part of a vast Arctic continental shelf that extended out from the mainland. I didn't see any pictures of boats indicating that this was pretty much a landlocked society. From the looks of it, this was a rich city.